Hey, Jimmy.
Hello.
So, where was the podcast last week? In my absence, you were meant to be holding the fort. What happened?
It got lost in the mail.
You're such a dick. You ruined the flow that we had.
Ruined the flow of your conversation as well, apparently.
Yeah. For some reason, my brain has ceased to work. But hello, I'm back from India. I've really changed as a person. I swam in the Ganges.
He's already done this routine for us.
Yeah. I've done it for almost everybody who has asked me, how was India? And I've done that, little skit.
Have you
totally
got something
hilarious.
Insightful to say about India?
Loads of poor people, loads of respect for anybody who exists there, because it's really hard. But, it was great. I had a great time.
It did look quite good. I did stalk you via Instagram.
My Instagram was on fire. Yeah. I was so good. Loads of hashtag InstaTravel.
Yeah, usually it's just pictures of Jazzer and his beard, so...
I mean, people love that. The sad thing is that most of my most popular posts are just selfies and me hashtagging InstaGay and hashtagging beard. John is also here. Yeah, John, what do you usually hashtag your Instagram posts with?
Oh,
Insta-ginge,
yeah.
I also sometimes hashtag ginger.
Oh, really?
Because I have ginger flecks in my
beard.
The beard
is getting very ginger at the moment.
Yeah. As the sun comes through, because we're moving into spring very soon, aren't we?
We are.
It will get speckled with flecks of auburn.
Somehow this has turned into some sort of breakfast.
In a parallel, as if we don't already talk about shit. Hello, by the way, this is the Right Dishonourable podcast, where we talk about politics, current events and social issues, usually weekly when Jimmy doesn't decide to,
It wasn't me, both of you left. Both of you at least put a good C between me and you, and, wouldn't confirm that via Skype.
I was too busy getting some. No, not really.
Well, now we know a little bit more about John's sex life. What are we going to talk... So, okay, we're talking about this week three subjects, as we always do. We'll last about 45 to 50 minutes, maybe even more if John gets particularly excited about his topic. But we should mention that David Cameron...
You just sound like I've got an erection under the table.
We don't talk about that, John. All right, just leave that out.
Sitting here naked.
I am here in a dressing gown, to be fair. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing about podcasting. You don't actually have to get dressed.
Yeah, we're actually all in an underwear, but Jazza felt a bit self-conscious, so he donned the dressing gown.
I have a butt plug right now.
I'm so sorry, listeners. So, we should probably, if we were a serious podcast, talk about the fact that David Cameron has... Just hours before us recording this, he has
announced
that there's going to be a referendum.
On June the 23rd.
As to whether the UK is going to leave or stay in the European Union.
We don't find this interesting enough to merit its own topic, so we're just going to skate over it.
Yeah, we've talked about this quite a lot in the past, and we each have our own kind of stories that we're reasonably interested in, so we're going to put those forward as well. If you would like to... butt heads with us on anything Europe-related, then feel free to find us on Twitter at @RightDishonourable.
We're basically waiting until Boris Johnson decides what he's going to do.
Yeah. Because Sajid Javid has decided that he's going to stick with the PM. Theresa May is sticking with the PM.
Michael Gove is going against the PM. He's campaigning to leave.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't surprise me, but it's Govey. Everybody hates him anyway.
If he hasn't got popularity issues already.
Yeah. So, what are the topics that we're going to be talking about this week? I'm asking myself that, because mine's the first.
Yours
I believe,
is the first,
isn't it?
Yeah.
So, the British LGBT Awards announced their shortlists for their categories.
Or are they?
What?
Are they the LGBT Awards?
Oh, we'll get to those kinds of punchlines soon, John. don't jump the guns for the listeners.
Sorry,
okay.
So
they've announced their shortlists, and I just made a video about this, and it's quite worrying, shall we say, or interesting.
Problematic.
That 28% of the individuals up for awards at the British LGBT Awards are actually straight people.
Some of them aren't even British.
Quite a lot of them aren't even British. There's a Global Icon Award as a category, and what's her name? Hillary Clinton has been nominated as a Global Icon, but not Bernie Sanders, despite the fact that Hillary, for quite a long time, was anti-gay marriage. But we'll go into that in a minute. And then, secondly, we've got a really boring topic from Jimmy, haven't we?
Yeah, well, you know, we sometimes do talk about the Lib Dems, and since they're so rarely in the news these days, I think it's worth covering their reports on why they got so fucking hammered at the election.
Mm-hmm. We should say that Jimmy and I are card-carrying members of the Liberal Democrats.
I actually have my card with me.
Oh, so do I.
Which I would show you, but it's a podcast, so you wouldn't be able to see.
That was pointless information that you were giving us there. Yeah. Very well done.
But the report doesn't really reveal anything new, and as Jazza says, it's very boring, but we're going to cover it anyway. Just, you know, skip about 40 minutes into the podcast and you can get to John's topic, which is...
Oh, Stephen Fry, he quit Twitter this week.
Again.
In a beautiful blog post called "Too Many People Have Peed in the Pool." And,
it is a beautiful, beautiful... It's very well written.
It's incredible. I love it. I love everything about it. I think it was ridiculous that... Basically, it all kicked off because he called somebody a bag lady at the BAFTAs. Turned out that she was a friend of his. Nobody on Twitter knew this. Everybody called him terrible, terrible names. And he decided that Twitter could fuck off, basically.
I used to love my bag lady at school. Probably says something about the kind of posh education that I had, the fact that we had a bag lady at school.
Even we didn't have a bag lady.
We had fencing classes, I'll have you know.
I think we had fencing classes.
Oh,
do you want to provide the usual disclaimer as to, you know, where this is coming from?
Oh, yeah, we're all cis white men, although I do get to legitimately have criticisms of the LGBT awards because I'm a gay man. So there's the context.
Jazz's balkanisation of intellectual discourse.
Well, no, it's just kind of like, it's an shut up.
That was a stonking fucking word, wasn't it? That was good.
It was, but you've kind of ruined the fact that you used it very smoothly by being like, guys, I used a really intellectual word. Shall we just go into...
It's baffled Jazza.
It hasn't baffled me. I was quite ready with a rebuttal, but you've gone and ruined it. Shall we go into some music and then start actually talking about some topics?
No.
John, please say yes.
Sorry, I just laughed so hard it's stuck.
This week, the British LGBT Awards announced their nominations for this year's awards, I suppose. And there is some contention as to who they've actually chosen to be part of these awards, because there is a large number of straight cisgendered individuals up for awards. It's actually 28% of individuals nominated are not from the LGBT community themselves. This is because they've chosen to have two categories that celebrate straight allies.
So it's not as if straight people have been nominated for...
No. Not for best gay presenter. And then, I don't know, Philip Schofield gets on it.
No, you never know.
Hey, you never do know. But this is calling into question why the Straight Ally Award even exists. Why are there... genuinely. But also why there were only 6 trans people up for any awards this year, and nearly 4 times as many straight people were up for awards than trans people.
There's a category called Corporate Straight Ally.
Yeah.
A non-corporate straight ally.
Yeah, so it's split into, like, celebrities and the corporate side of things. The corporate side of things is clearly, like, whoever sponsors the thing gets a nomination, right? And the celebrity side is John is scrolling through the website and giggling. Who are you specifically giggling at?
Danny Dyer. Where the fuck is he up for an award?
He was on the front page of Attitude or the Gay Times, I think. So there are some quite questionable people in the celebrity side of things up for Best Straight Ally, which I think that we should talk about. My video was tilted towards the fact that the very popular 10 million subscriber YouTuber Zoe Sugg was up for a nomination for Straight Ally, and her bio literally says something along the lines of, she has a gay character in a book that she had ghostwritten for her, and she's made some videos with Tyler Oakley, who is a very big LGBT YouTuber in the USA.
I mean, I've done, you know, 30-plus podcasts with Jazza now. I must be up for an award too.
Yeah, so you just need to be in the same room as a gay man, like, sometimes, and then you're up for
an award, Dave, for not being a dick to gay people.
Yeah, so there is a lot of criticism. There is a lot of criticism of the fact that this award even exists, because it doesn't really seem to champion straight allies, in the sense of people who are campaigning really hard on LGBT issues as a straight person. It seems to be more of a, you're a straight person who has been associated with some gay things or have a particularly large gay following. One other celebrity who's up for this, who's up for this Straight Ally Award is Nigella Lawson, who once, the reason that they're apparently putting her up for this award is because she once said that she was a gay man in a woman's body, which is it's really not the most fantastic kind of interpretation of gender or, you know, LGBT issues.
I was thinking about this on the way here, and I thought it's kind of like having an Asian culture award where somebody gets nominated for not saying that Chinese people are yellow or something.
Like, yeah.
It really is bad.
I feel, so the race thing is something that in the comments of my video, a lot of people have kind of flagged up as kind of like a potential parallel, as if there were a like minorities, an ethnic minorities award, and actually 30% of the people who were nominated for awards were white. The rest of this, like 65% were people of black origin, and then only 5% were of other ethnic minorities. Like, that seems to be what has happened, because the majority of people who are up for awards in this are also part of the L and the G. So they are gay men and women who are still, like, classed as cisgendered people.
So proportionally, though, there's way more gay, cisgendered men and women than there are transsexuals or...
Transgender.
Yeah. Or bisexuals? I don't know.
Bisexual people. Not many people do know the stats of bisexuals. It's quite difficult to define, but... that's not... Yes, in terms of proportion, there are fewer trans people than lesbian, gay and bisexual people. However, the whole point of this award is to highlight great people from the trans community and people who are meant to be there to inspire others in, like, to live full and amazing lives, right? This is meant to be one of the places...
you can win awards in, other than the straight ally ones?
Best LGBT presenter, or best media personality. There's Best Moment, which is not an award for a particular individual, but it's an award for stuff like Mairi Black being elected to Parliament, or the Supreme Court okaying gay marriage in the USA.
I mean, isn't this partly a reflection that gay men and lesbians are just more prominent in public life, though, can you argue?
No, yes, completely. But isn't it the LGBT awards job to highlight people from all of those categories?
Hmm.
And for the love of God, for there not to be four times as many straight people up for awards than trans people, that is just insulting. And I say this in my video, the fact that... they must have seen the lists and seen, like, the categories of people and realised that there were four times as many straight people as trans people and thought, oh, no, maybe this isn't the LGBT awards. Maybe this is just the gays, lesbians and their mates awards.
Really pisses me off, this award, because my initial reaction to it when... Because I didn't even know it existed. My initial reaction...
To be completely honest, John, neither did I until a couple of days ago when somebody showed it to me.
Like, my initial reaction to it was kind of, oh, how sad that we live in a society where this is actually necessary. Because I can totally understand why it exists and why it is necessary. I just think it's, for example, at the Oscars, you know, it's gender binaries, and you know, that's how the awards are given out. We don't live in a
society... Oh, yeah, actor where, and actress.
Yeah, we don't live in a society where that's kind of gone out the window. So I think it's sad in a way that these have to exist in the first place. But for them to exist and then end up kind of championing sort of straight people over LGBT people, it's just... Fucking... What is the point?
Yeah, it is a bit of a kick in the teeth, and it does make you think, why do these awards even... bloody exist.
Is there no strategic advantage in highlighting straight allies?
Of course there's a strategic advantage in it. The reason that they have somebody like Zoella up for an award is so that people click on their website and look.
Well, there you go.
That's the reason why. But then, when she wins an award, because this is a popularity contest by the amount of people who vote for you once you've been put up for the actual award. It's an online poll. When Zoe inevitably wins, the headline from the British LGBT Award is going to be that Zoe won an award. It's not going to be the spotlight being shone on any of the great people, great other people who are nominated for awards in various other categories. There's some real champions of the LGBT community.
Some really bad nominations as well, like LGBT celebrity. There's Alan Carr, Boy George. Why are those two nominated? That's such old news. It'd be a bit embarrassing to have Boy George turn up, surely. He's like gay grandpa by now.
Well, he is a judge on The Voice, or a mentor on The Voice, so that's made him vaguely relevant.
But presumably they're hoping that if Zoella wins the award, it will actually merit to mention in the national media. Then. Whereas if
what was the point in having an LGBT award if a straight person becomes the headline? That's what is the bloody point?
Well, if no one becomes the headline, is it not better to have people become aware of this award ceremony, which I assume is quite young anyway?
Yeah,
right? Well, that's kind of a fallacy, isn't it? Because you're basically saying we should use straight people to make people aware of this LGBT award and then just keep awarding straight people so that, you know, there are straight people out there who are interested in the straight winner of an LGBT award.
The thing is, I have less of a problem with the fact that the Straight Ally Award exists, but I think that it should be awarded to people who have genuinely worked really hard to champion LGBT causes and to help the community and the huge problems that we still have. LGBT youths are still the most likely, by several, times, to be homeless kids on the streets in the UK and also across the world.
You know what strikes me, looking through this list of the straight allies, is why isn't Jeffrey Tambor there for the role that he's done in Transparent?
I don't know.
Because that is, to me, that is, the guy's won an Emmy for it and a Golden Globe as well, I think. Or he might have won just one of those. But he's won an award for portraying a trans human being.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, been, everybody has said that it's wonderful, it's been incredibly sensitive, it's helped bring the issue to the... That, to me, is deserving of an award, not fucking Danny Dyer.
So this is the
Eddie
problem,
Redmayne,
right?
Eddie Redmayne in his, right, now this year I'm going to try something else that is, you know, like a minority issue, arguably. I'm going to go for a trans person, so next year, watch out, it's me in blackface.
The problem is that a lot of the people, specifically in the celebrity straight ally section of these awards, they've done very little past hang out with a gay person. Last year, actually, Daniel Radcliffe won the Straight Ally Award, the Celebrity Straight Ally Award.
Mm-hmm.
And he won it because he's done a lot of work with, I believe it was the Trevor Project that he's worked with. Zoe is up for this award, and although she's done a load of really great stuff in terms of like mental health and anxiety, I'm repeating what I say in the video, but she's never been associated with an LGBT cause, campaign or charity. And if all you need to do to be able to get on the shortlist for this award is have 10 million subscribers and hang out with Tyler Oakley every now and again, then quite frankly, take me outside and shoot me. There's no bloody point anymore.
Well, I think award ceremonies are pretty pointless anyway, though.
Yeah.
So, why are we even arguing about this?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, exactly.
Why are we doing this?
Just because...
Sort of complaining that award ceremonies are corrupt and self-serving is like complaining England is fucking wet.
Yeah, but the British LGBT Awards, I expect a certain thing from that. I expect it to, be like corporate and smoozy and a little bit sickening. Because that's what award ceremonies are like. And they are out to make money.
Mm-hmm.
But when they've decided, oh, you know what? We can't make this, like, cool enough without having like loads of straight people winning awards as well. And I think that that is just very disappointing to come out of my own community, where we should be, and we are generally proud of the fact that we are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender, and all of the other letters as well. And it just seems to be a rejection of what we actually are in favour of getting some mainstream people like Holly Willoughby on side. That annoys
me. But you don't think that's potentially more valuable than doing the more authentic thing that you suggested earlier?
What do you mean?
Authentic in the sense of actually giving awards to people who deserve awards, as opposed to giving awards to people, like, as a backpatting exercise.
I'm just... sorry, hang on. I know this is cutting completely across to what you were talking about.
Let Jezza answer that point first.
I understand the inclusion of an ally award in order to get some more eyeballs, but the thing is, last year, the main headline was Daniel Radcliffe wins LGBT award. And that, I don't think that that's what these awards should be about. They should be about championing LGBT people, and rather than being like, well done, straight person. You haven't had to go through anything that we've had to go through, but thank you for kind of like hanging around in the same room as us every now and again. That really means a lot. Thank you.
That's true, because Holly Willoughby's been nominated literally for interviewing LGBT people. That's surely a fucking joke, right?
Yeah. Also, Hillary Clinton has been nominated for the Global Icon Award, which is a very confusing part of the whole award ceremony. And she, until very recently... And she was against marriage equality until the rest of the electorate came around to that viewpoint.
Although I'm
a really big fan of Hillary Clinton, and I think that actually her pragmatism on stuff like gay marriage probably means that she'd be a better president than somebody like Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump... that she shouldn't be winning awards for being an LGBT advocate, because she only became an LGBT advocate when it was cool.
She wasn't a hipster enough.
Well, you could argue that she only became, not necessarily when it was cool, but when it became safe.
Yeah, precisely. Do you have any other questions you want to ask me? Because I'm all riled up now.
Not really, but I think it does strike me that the thing about the Daniel Radcliffe headline... Mm. You're never going to get any interest from the national media in anything other than those sort of headlines of celebrity.
What a load of absolute bullshit. Claire Balding is a national fucking treasure.
Can I just like...
Yeah, but people write about Claire Balding for the sake of Claire Balding. They don't necessarily write about her because of the LGBT
thing.
If she were the biggest person to win an award, for example, I've plucked her out of the air. If she were to win an award for LGBT causes, which she does do. She does a lot of work with LGBT charities. She would be the main focus of the award ceremony.
Yeah, but Daniel Radcliffe wins LGBT awards is a
yeah, but it's not meant to. It's not meant to be about straight people.
It should be about straight people. I'm saying if you make it about straight people, you're probably going to get more media coverage.
Great, but then what is the point? What is the point in having an LGBT award if you're just going to give things to straight people?
I suppose it's the balance between attracting attention to your
I don't think the balance should be four times as many straight people being nominated for awards than trans people.
Yeah, I agree. But I think this is an argument about balance. It's not really an argument about.
I think you're incorrect, though. You're just assuming that there are straight celebrities in general are more famous than gay celebrities. Look at the Global Icon.
But you don't understand why Daniel Radcliffe wins LGBT award is an interesting headline because it's unexpected. Claire Balding wins LGBT award is not an interesting headline because it conforms to your expectations.
Yeah, because
basic fucking news values.
But then it takes away the whole gaze from the people who are meant to be championed in this to the, no offence guys, but to the group that have traditionally squashed us down and taken away our rights. And although Daniel Radcliffe and Zoe are lovely, that's fucking bullshit.
It is, but it depends, you know. From a strategic point of view, it's different from your point of view, which is more about historical injustice.
If your sole goal is to generate headlines, then fine, go for it. But I'm going to throw away my invitation that I'm inevitably going to get after all of this coverage I've given them.
That's true. There's no point having these awards if they are just geared towards the headline on the front page afterwards.
But there's not that much point having the awards, redundant. Which are supposed to champion a cause, if it doesn't actually get any media attention. You know, that's part of what an award ceremony is supposed to do.
I disagree.
Then have an LGBT advocate, a straight ally, just kind of like as the... as like a smaller part of the awards, then you can still have your headline.
Yeah,
but you can
I agree.
Fewer than nearly a third of people in the awards.
I think I agree with you, but you're still shouting at me.
Yeah, no, I'm just very. I'm so sorry, Jimmy. I'm just very annoyed about that whole thing. Also, I have headphones in.
I disagree with the idea that you know you should have. This shouldn't be an award about media coverage. I disagree with the idea of like, what's the point in doing the awards if they don't have media coverage? You do the awards because they're important to the LGBT community. Not the whole point should not be that they're relevant to the whatever it is. You know, the statistics, they say what 90% of people are straight and only 10% of people.
It's very difficult to measure.
Yeah,
because you have to say I'm gay.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's anything between like 5 and 10%.
Right. Well, so
10 is generous.
Let's for sake of argument say that you know 90% of people are straight or whatever. Mm. These awards aren't for that 90% of people. They are for that 10%. So what is the fucking point in setting them up so that there can be a headline for the 90%?
Oh, well, the
headline isn't for the 90%.
But it is.
No, it isn't.
Jazza, as a gay man, are you really going to be interested if after this award you read that so-and-so straight person won a gay award?
No, I roll my eyes. And
exactly.
I think that most of the people who... who've been engaging with this on my social media, and obviously I have my own social media bubble, which is its own echo chamber, but they're just kind of confused as to why being a decent human being... I think we've gotten to the point now in the Western world where we think that straight people should be treated as normal people, and awarding that...
You mean gay people should be treated as
normal people? LGBT people should be treated as normal people, and the fact that that basic decency of humanity deserves an award is a bit like, great, pat yourselves on the back again, mate, go for it.
I think it's a bit like giving an Oscar to a non-actor to create headlines. It's bullshit. You don't, like, you know, you don't pick somebody off Hollywood Boulevard to say, we're going to give you an Oscar tonight just so that we can, you know, create a bit of controversy. That's fucking moronic.
We've been talking about this for a while now,
yeah.
And it's my topic, so I'm going to close it down. If you'd like to engage with us on social media, you can find me at Jazza John, or you can talk to us all at Right Dishonor. Sound good?
Yeah, sounds all right.
You're next, aren't you, Jimmy?
I am.
Ah, boring topic. Oh.
Can't be more boring than that one.
Fuck you.
The reason that Leonard Jones got destroyed, at least as detailed in this report, include the fact that their programme wasn't very clear and their relationship to the government wasn't very clear throughout the whole of the parliament. They didn't do enough to distance themselves from the Conservative decisions. There was the whole fuss about tuition fees, which I'm sure we will discuss.
It's a bit more than a fuss.
The raucous outrage,
yeah.
around the tuition fees. The sense they didn't come up with a cohesive campaign message in the short election, which is the, was it 30 days before,
yeah.
six weeks before the actual election day. The lack of money, lack of funding was blamed for stopping them taking good polls throughout the first 2 years of the coalition government. You guys have both read it. What do you make of the report?
There's
roughly
a conspicuous absence of the fact that during that whole election campaign, Nick Clegg looked like a middle-aged man in crisis who wanted to hang himself.
He did, just for the last year of government in general, actually, he just looked incredibly sad. And it just made me empathise with him, and I was like, you poor man. I almost hoped that he'd lost his seat so he didn't have to do this anymore. And then his wife could gallivant off to Spain and, like, lead the country there, and he would have been a lovely, like, first lady for Spain.
That's true.
But it does seem to be... It seems to be less bitter about the fact that the UK media landscape doesn't really cater to the fact that compromise is part of being in a coalition. That was one of their points, right?
There's a lot of blame laid on the media for not understanding how coalition works.
So I think...
distorting the image of the Lib Dems.
I initially thought that it was blame. But also, this is, like, a flaw in our... in the way that media portray things as very black and white. And when you have quite a lot of grey as part of one of the components of government, it can be quite difficult for the media to you know, portray their stance effectively.
Yeah.
And then it was very easy.
That is something that has been true for a very long time. And the Lib Dems should have planned ahead, knowing that that was probably going to be the case.
And there was evidence of that with the Greens in Ireland and of the D66 in the Netherlands, right? They were also minor more left-leaning components of a larger government, of a larger coalition government. And they also got
smashed.
Like, flounced in the next elections that they had.
I think basically from an electoral perspective, the Lib Dems just shouldn't have gone into coalition. And I think everything from then on in was damage limitation, as far as I can work out. The thing that strikes me about the report is a lot of it focuses on tactics and campaign strategy and how you deal with the media and messaging and that sort of thing. But it does seem to kind of skirt around the fact that this was strategically a terrible fucking decision from an electoral point of view.
Yeah, but it was the right decision.
Do you think it was the right decision?
If you wanted the Lib Dems to have a landslide in 2015, then yes, it was the wrong decision. But I think that at the time, I think that we forget how dire we were seen as economically in 2010. Mm. Like, we were still in the depths of recession, and people were saying that if we didn't form a government, then the markets are just going to go absolutely crazy. And we managed to form a coalition in a relatively short amount of time. And I think that the Lib Dems, like, I feel like Lib Dems in general do have a bit of it is my duty. We must do the right thing at self-sacrifice. I feel like that's a relatively common trait in Lib Dems in general.
But they could have gone for like a supply and demand agreement, or confidence in supply is the name of the
So agreement. I was in China at the time, and I don't remember that ever being considered as an option.
Yeah, I don't recall it being floated as an idea.
It was supply and demand only became like a sexy phrase.
It's
when
confidence and supply.
Confidence and supply.
Yeah.
Only became like a sexy phrase in the run-up to the 2015 election, when all of the smaller parties were like, yeah, we're not going to go into coalition with anybody because we've seen what's happened to the Lib Dems.
But
it didn't seem like an option
back
then.
The SNP might arrange a deal with Labour where they'd support their budget, which is the supply part of the deal, and also support them in the event of a vote of no confidence, which is the confidence part of supply and confidence, or confidence and supply. I just feel that that was kind of the main thing in terms of Lib Dems. The other problem with the Lib Dems is that ever since, like, Charles Kennedy and also Paddy Ashdown, they've kind of built their voter base on the back of being the other party, like the none of the above party.
Oh, yeah.
And what happened as soon as they went into government, all the people that voted for them, because they weren't in power, basically, immediately rushed off somewhere else. Sometimes, ironically, they rushed off to the Conservatives.
Yeah, if you look at southwest England at the moment, which used to be Lib Dem heartland, it's all blue now.
Yeah. And so, like, some of them were left-leaning people that weren't happy with Labour, and they've moved on to the Greens. Sometimes they moved back to Labour, especially under Jeremy Corbyn. But there seems to be a lot of, like, fundamental shifts in the voting market, as it were, that this report doesn't really focus on. It's more a strategic kind of analysis of how you campaign as opposed to how you position yourself, which, to me, the positioning is more important, frankly.
So what do you think, now that we have Tim Farron as the leader of the Liberal Democrats, who's seen as a lot more left-leaning than his predecessor, Nick Clegg, do you think that it's going to be possible for the Lib Dems to be able to mount any kind of a resurgence in the next 5 years?
I wouldn't say so, because all you have to do in a debate is ask him for his position on gay people, and he's going to alienate an awful lot of voters.
So I feel like the Lib Dems get a lot of... Tim gets a lot of flack for that, but Lib Dems as a party... Deservedly. I mean, as a gay Lib Dem, deservedly so. But I think that it was the Lib Dems who kind of... Lynn Featherston was the Lib Dem who pushed it through.
The electorate don't think about that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
they
don't.
They just look at the leader at the time and what the leader stands for.
And
we've
something
got a
that
very
you
sort of celebrity centric. Well, this is the head of the party.
Yeah.
This is what they say.
That is actually one point raised by the report, is that eventually Nick Clegg became the entirety of the Lib Dems, to the extent that almost none of the other senior Lib Dems were really included.
That's
as part
true
of those
every
conversations.
Party, though. You know, actually, even people just don't understand how politics works. You know, we look at the Nobody actually looks at the cabinet, for example. They tend to just look at David Cameron, yeah. with like a few notable exceptions.
Boris Johnson and Theresa May are very, and even Gove to a certain extent.
I feel Gove's like a massive hate figure on the left because he, you know, challenges their perception of how the education system should work and now the justice system, I suppose. But yeah, in general discourse, I don't think Gove's very well known.
The figures that you just mentioned tend to be people who are picked up on by the media as potential successors.
Yeah.
So we've started to look at Theresa May because she could be a successor.
Yeah, but that's inevitable because David Cameron has said that I'm not going to contest the 2020 election.
Oh, yeah, no, I know it's inevitable, but it also just shows how we don't look at MPs for their merits and what they individually...
There was ministers that are picked up for their record, though. Like, I know Ian Duncan Smith used to be the Tory leader, but the reason that he's in the media now is because he's, you know, running the Department of Work and Pensions into the ground. And Gove is actually covered in the media. It's not expected he'll ever be leader, I don't think. You know, there's probably, if you go to the bookies,
it would be very surprising.
He's an outside figure in that respect. He's covered because he's actually quite an interesting politician, irrespective of whether you like him or not. He actually gets stuff done.
In the run-up to the 2015 election, the Lib Dems did kind of try and wrap themselves in the security blanket of, oh, actually, locally, we're quite popular. And so it was like, there was an expectation that the party was quite unpopular because of stuff like the failure of the AB referendum, student fees, Nick Clegg being really sad. But they thought that, local MPs are very popular within their constituencies, and so a lot of them are going to carry through. And that was, we had loads of really inaccurate polling, but that was kind of followed through with what the polls looked like in the run-up to 2015. Do you think that that whole idea of a local MP being able to be popular locally and juxtaposing that with how unpopular their wider party is, do you think that that's possible in future elections?
The reason that... the Lib Dems actually managed to get to the point where they had almost 60 seats. The peak was actually under Charles Kennedy in 2005, yeah. I think it was. The reason they got to that is because of really effective local campaigning, to the extent that Nigel Farage, when he talks about how UKIP are going to gain ground, he wants to emulate Charles Kennedy's model of local campaigning. And that's the only way that the Lib Dems are going to come back. But I think this time they should probably seek more to carve out a unique identity for themselves, as opposed to where just the none of the above party, especially because now there's a load of second-tier parties that are also competing in that space. Exactly.
Yeah, but do you think that there's really any hope for them gaining any ground in the current first-past-the-post system?
I think it's difficult for them, but the actual state of Labour at the moment does, I think, give them a chance of being
I feel like people are more likely to run from Labour towards the Greens or UKIP the Lib Dems. I don't understand the Lib Dems are going to get any of their votes from.
Right now, the best party for you is probably the Lib Dems. And I'm not saying that just because, you know, we are members of the Lib Dems, just ideologically, that's probably the party that's best fit for you.
Mm-hmm. But not really anymore under Tim Farron.
Well, there was this whole thing of, like, Tim Farron, when he, during his leadership, wanted to campaign on a social democratic platform as part of the left of the party. As soon as he saw Jeremy Corbyn was elected, he immediately started talking up the Blairite link a little bit more. Mm-hmm.
Orange Book Lib Dems is kind of there.
Yeah, so Orange Book Lib Dems are more like the classical liberal wing of the Lib Dems, the more right wing, you would say. The social democratic side, which is headed up by Tim Farron, was also occupied by Charles Kennedy.
Yeah.
So in that sense, the party has arguably picked the wrong leader in terms of positioning. They probably would have been better off with Norman Lamb,
voted for. You fucked us over, Jimmy. Thank you very much.
Me personally, yeah. I was responsible for electing Farron. But he is a far better speaker than Lamb is, which does matter.
Yeah, but I don't think that's been particularly important because nobody's been listening to Farron speak. So it didn't matter whether we had a great orator or not. We just needed somebody who would be able to, you know, stand in a position on the political spectrum that most people who are disenfranchised by the current really left-leaning Labour and could never vote Tory, they just wanted somebody somewhere in the middle of that, and we could have really easily occupied that space with Norman Lamb. But that election is over now.
I think we still can, because most people actually fundamentally do not understand the intricacies of each party, as, you know, as you were saying in the last topic or earlier. This segment, people don't understand politics. You know,
no,
people
are
fundamentally
really
ignorant about them, and that is something that It's something that Lib Dems complain about in their report, but it's also something that they should seek to capitalise on, because the Tories
definitely
capitalise on
it. Wasn't our fault that we got annihilated at the election. It was everybody else's fault. It was the electorate for not voting for us.
I think Tom Brake should have stood for the nomination, because he covered the local election side bit, because he's one of their most successful MPs in terms of approval ratings and...
He's been around since 97.
And how much people love him. Is he Carl Shorten or something?
Carl Shorten Wallington, yeah.
There've been national pieces in national newspapers about what a successful MP is and how beloved he is by his constituents. Genuinely, I've seen those.
Okay, yeah.
So that it would have covered that area. And also, I mean, Tim Farron's a Christian and...
and we're not a very Christian nation, despite the fact that Cameron seems to keep on trying
not so long ago where they said this country should systematically de-Christianise because already a majority of people do not affiliate themselves with any major religion.
The problem that the Lib Dems have got now is they are one of the whitest parties in Westminster.
They are the whitest party. Whitest, most male. Because they're all white and male. I mean, it's not hard to do the maths.
When you have eight MPs, you know, there's a, you know...
Yeah, but look, the Greens are doing better than even. I think the DUP even have a lady.
The Greens are equally white as the Lib Dems.
Yeah, but 100%... But 100% more female.
True.
Yeah. You could have a look at that. I guess you could start doing gradations.
John, who did you vote for in the last year's election? Do you mind me asking?
I didn't actually vote. Because I was in a Labour safe seat, so
he said, "Fuck it."
Why do I allow you on the podcast?
No, because I would have voted Lib Dem, but there was really no point. I was in there, and
East London. Everybody, like the council in my constituency, has been completely red since the 70s. There's literally on paper, there's no point in me voting, but I have a democratic. What's wrong with you? What would it take for you to vote Lib Dem again? Would you vote Lib Dem again? I'm trying to get an outsider's view.
What would it take for him to vote Lib Dem is really
Yeah, what
question.
Would it take for you to vote Lib Dem?
If we paid you to go down the polling station, would you go?
No, I think if in my constituency there wasn't a decent candidate. I mean, I did actually look very heavily at local issues. Like in my constituency, the Labour guy was so popular because essentially he's the only person trying to keep the library open. Because the
libraries are important.
The library in where we are, oddly enough, is half Lambeth, which is Conservative, and they want to shut it down. So essentially his entire campaign was built around keep the library open.
That's great on a global podcast. We're talking about libraries in Lambeth. Does anybody have anything else to say?
You've sort of asked me, so what do you think the Lib Dems need to do to get back to a decent amount of seats in the House of Commons?
Get wiped out in 2020, no MPs, and then start completely from scratch. Maybe even rebrand. Call yourselves the Liberals or the Social Democrats again. Like, I feel like the Lib Dem brand is so toxic, the whole thing needs an overhaul.
Yeah.
Frankly.
On that note.
Bye-bye. Oh, no, not yet. John's next with... We're talking about Stephen Fry.
Stephen Fry.
And his hissy fit on Twitter.
Are we going? I should really have checked. Right.
We are, for the record. Yeah.
So this week, Stephen Fry quit Twitter, which I'm sure loads of people listening to this are thinking, why the fuck should I care? Well, Stephen Fry quit Twitter because he made some comments at the BAFTAs last Sunday. He called the winner for Best Costume Design or something a bag lady when she came to collect her award. She was dressed in a leather jacket and a t-shirt.
He compared her style of dress to that of a bag lady.
To that, which, to clarify, a bag lady is a vagrant. Twitter went fucking nuts. Everybody said he was a misogynist.
A bag lady is a vagrant.
Yeah, it is. Look it up.
No, it's
not. It's a London term for a vagrant.
No, it's not. A bag lady is the person in public school who collects
really not.
Oh, God, have we been calling the... At my school, did we call the bag lady a vagrant?
Yeah, basically.
Oh, dear. Well, that's very embarrassing. My privilege is shining through right now.
And he went on this, basically everybody on Twitter called him terrible things and tweeted things at him. And he tweeted from backstage something along the lines of, fuck off, and showed a picture of him with this woman. It turned out that they were friends. She didn't take any offence to it at all. She's actually come out in The Guardian or something, or The Independent, and said, he didn't offend me at all. I think this is all ridiculous. And he said this. I'm going to read this verbatim quickly because I think it's absolutely beautiful.
He is a very good writer, is Stephen Fry.
This was on his website in a blog post called Too Many People Have Peed in the Pool. Let us grieve what Twitter has become, a stalking ground for the sanctimoniously self-righteous who love to second-guess, to leap to conclusions and be offended. Worse, to be offended on behalf of others they do not even know. It's as nasty and unwholesome a characteristic as can be imagined. It doesn't matter whether they think they're defending women, men, transgender people, Muslims, humanists. The ghastliness is absolutely the same. It makes sensible people want to take an absolutely opposite view. I've heard people shriek their secularism in such a way as to make me instantly want to become an evangelical Christian.
So I also kind of bemoan what Twitter is becoming, but I bemoan the fact that Twitter is no longer a place where people chat shit. It doesn't really seem to be a place where a lot of discussion seems to happen. It's now kind of grown into an ecosystem that is full of, like, little bubbles of echo chamber.
I think this has become the case with all social media. I think Charlie Brooker said something a couple of years ago that social media has become the world's greatest video game. Because people post things up and they want to get as many likes or as much recognition as they can. And part of getting likes and recognition now has taken on this sort of identity of let's attack people for saying anything that can be construed as in some way not left-wing enough or not progressive. And I do think it's a bit ridiculous. I do think, you know, the internet is meant to be this beautiful democratized space where you're allowed to have free speech and say essentially anything. Because, you know, free speech is an enshrined human right. And yet we have turned it into basically the world's largest forum on censorship.
Yeah, but that's not what most people's experience of the internet is. It is a minority of people, though they have the loudest voices, it is a minority of people who do the whole social justice warrior thing. And frankly, sometimes you just do need to tell them to fuck off and shut up, and you don't know what you don't know the circumstances under which I'm talking about this. There's that really famous story of the lady who tweeted something really stupid. She said, she got on a plane and
she got on a plane and was going to Africa
and tweeted, "Hope I don't get AIDS" or something like that.
"Hope I don't get AIDS," and then she also tweeted, "Just joking, I'm white, obviously I won't get AIDS," which is supposed to be a comment on the way that African government has handled the AIDS crisis.
Yeah. But also, I don't think that it was really a commentary on that. I think it was just her making a really terrible joke. But then she got on the plane, and by the time she got off the plane, she had lost her job.
Yeah, I mean, this is described in John Ronson's book, You've Been Changed.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you could say it wasn't a great joke, but it was, the joke was really on the government. It wasn't really a joke against black people.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, I sort of feel like the internet is as savage as it ever was. It's become a bit more corporatised, and in certain places it's become more sanitised.
But yeah, that's what I've been learning about Twitter.
I don't think that we should accept these things. Like, you just, as you said, a woman lost her job. Recently, there was another, Jimmy Carr has been fined, and now potentially will find it really hard to appear on the BBC, because on an episode of The One Show, he made, I can't understand this at all. He was talking about how he...
Jimmy Carr being a British comedian.
British comedian. He was trying to talk about how he was trying to come up with, you know, more jokes for his stand-up routines. He said, "I've come up with something I think is really economical. Ready? Dwarf shortage." The only thing offensive about that joke is how actually unfunny it is, if anything. Like, it's not an inherently offensive joke, because dwarfism is a scientifically recognised term. He hasn't said, like, slander.
There's no such thing as inherently offensive otherwise. It's all about perception.
But so many people, and by so many, I mean about fucking 15 people, called into Ofcom. Ofcom said, "Oh, well, it offended 15 people. He shouldn't have said this. We're fining The One Show. And Jimmy Carr's a terrible person." All over a wordplay joke. That's the sort of state things have got to now.
I mean, we did talk about this when Jacob and Mike Truman, the comedian twin, double act, came on the podcast like a few months ago. And we talked specifically about the offensiveness of jokes and the fact that people jump into a space where they haven't where their presence hasn't necessarily been assessed by the person telling the joke, and they go, "I'm offended by this," and then they leave the room. And it's kind of like, this wasn't meant to include you. So comedy used to be in a darkened basement somewhere underneath a pub. And you kind of had a contract with the people that some of the jokes are going to be offensive, some of the jokes are going to be shit. And you kind of gave somebody a license to, throw shit at the wall and see what happens. Whereas now, the place where people test jokes is on somewhere like Twitter, where there isn't a bouncer on the door taking, £3 to stop the equivalent of social justice warriors, from being able to get in. And so now the fact that this is become like a global conversation makes it very difficult for context to actually be.
I think Ryan's also the Trumans are kind of overstating the problem, though. You have to bear in mind that before the internet came out, as you say, there were licensed premises, there were far more gatekeepers than there are now. Anyone can set up a YouTube channel or a Twitter account now and tweet what they want. The reality is we're far more free to say what we think and to set up blogs and alternative podcasts even and broadcast ourselves.
Are we an alternative podcast?
Well, I guess so, because no one listens to us. but we're far freer, actually.
If you listen to us, tweet us.
Before the internet came around, all that's happened is that as the internet has become more prominent in our lives, it's become constrained by some of the social cues or whatever, or social etiquette things that, affect daily life. That's all to me that seems to be happening.
But you're like, I don't agree. So, for example, I've been sort of doing CVs and stuff recently because I'm close to graduating.
Oh, God, the fear.
Yeah, the fear. Because as a writer, script writer, whatever, there are different organisations I'd like to work for. There are some I've been sort of outright told that I can't even think of applying for unless I completely sanitise every form of outlet I have ever been involved with. Which, instantly, because I'm part of this podcast...
Yeah, you're part, sorry.
It's kind of bad
for me. In the next few months, when you blame all of your unemployment on us, then
that whole thing in recruitment of, they'll check all your social media profiles is bollocks. I've been in a lot of job interviews where they haven't even read the CV. So I think it's one of those things that recruiters intelligent and really up with it, but it's actually,
the point is, though, that it's fucking possible. And, the other point is that from a social point of view, we're starting to jump on these social bandwagons more and more and more. I never use Facebook, but recently on Facebook...
What? they are my employer, John.
Yeah, I basically never use Facebook, but recently on Facebook, I posted up a... It was like a short trailer of the new Wonder Woman movie because it came out and I got really excited and I said, isn't it great that in my lifetime I'm going to see this feminist icon on the silver screen? I got fucking everybody coming in on me saying, sorry, what do you mean feminist icon? What makes you think you're allowed to define what a feminist icon is?
This
fictional character has twice been the front cover of Miss magazine, as in the feminist magazine in America.
You don't have to justify Wonder Woman being a feminist icon. That's the case where shut up. There's an awful lot of me on the internet as well, and I can tell you that
far too much,
it is. There's far too much of my beautiful, beautiful face. But you'll be fine because somehow, John, despite the 7 or 8 years that I have of terrible YouTube videos and tweets, I've still managed to find employment. So you'll be fine.
At a social media company.
Although I'm not sure if they checked my social media.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But when you come across... So I got into a little bit of a Twitter war with a trans YouTuber while I was in India. And it was because she chose to describe RuPaul, who is a black, cis male drag queen. And the trans girl describes the way that RuPaul's show kind of portrays blackness as basically RuPaul being a white man in blackface. And it was, I did the thing where I was like incredibly offended on behalf of RuPaul. I don't know if RuPaul was particularly offended by it. But then I got a lot of her fans kind of like jumping on my Twitter feed and whatever. And I just kind of had to be like, let's just step away from social media and appreciate that these people strongly disagree with me.
Sometimes on the internet you have to set fire to something and walk away.
That's what I apparently choose to do.
See, the problem with this, though, I was talking to this about somebody the other day. I appreciate what you're saying is very mature.
Talking to this about somebody?
Sorry, talking to somebody. I appreciate what you're saying. I appreciate what you're saying is very mature and, you know, experienced and reasoned, etc.
Accurate.
But what people tend not to think about is, although, say, us three might be able to react reasonably when somebody jumps on us on Twitter for saying something that has either been misconstrued or is unfortunate or whatever, there are people out there who can't. They don't have the tools to. Like, they might be mentally ill. They might just be a bit sensitive. They could have learning difficulties, anything. And these people are actually in danger of harming themselves if somebody jumps up. Stephen Fry,
your solution to this? I mean, you could equally say those same people might be offended by something Stephen Fry says and harm themselves. So it's...
This is what I was saying to somebody the other day. I think it's fine if you have a problem with what somebody says and you point it out in, like, an eloquent way. You point it out, but if you sort of tweet Stephen Fry, you're a cunt. No, I actually think that that should be, like, an offence, really, to be honest.
On what grounds?
No, I don't think
Because if you pass somebody in the street and you...
And you say, you're a cunt, and you say nothing happens.
So there's an interesting parallel.
There is a law that says that that's common.
Can I, as the token minority, wade in here? I knew that would shut you both up. So there's something interesting about what John is saying in terms of, like, so I've been subject to homophobic abuse both online and in the street. Mm. And I've had stuff thrown at me and I've had people call me really nasty names. Yeah. That is illegal. Like, using hate speech against me, like, in public is illegal. And throwing things at me because I'm a gay man is illegal.
It's illegal under very specific laws.
Under very specific laws. And I can tell you now that being told that I'm a fag in real life and having cars slow down and people yell at me and say that I'm disgusting is very, very different to people doing it on Twitter. Because I can click the mute button and I can close the laptop and I can walk away from Twitter. When I'm walking down Hackney High Street, I can't walk away from that suddenly.
But this is exactly what I mean. You're potentially, you could argue, fortunate in the sense that you're able to draw that dividing line in your head. There are people who can't. Stephen Fry is actually a brilliant example of this. Stephen Fry is a man with a long history of mental illness. He recently spoke to a newspaper about how after an interview in, I forget which African country it was, but it was to do with, they were going to make being gay a sort of...
It was...
Uganda or something.
Uganda. Out there.
He felt so depressed after this interview and what this guy had said to him that he went back to his room and attempted to commit suicide. He swallowed a bottle of pills and whatever. Mm. Stephen Fry is a perfect example of somebody who you shouldn't just fire loads of nasty shit at on Twitter.
By leaving Twitter. Twitter is its own ecosystem, and I don't think that we should start regulating Twitter beyond what already really exists. And so people who are vulnerable should be discouraged from being in those spheres and being in those spaces in the same way that they'd be discouraged from being in certain physical spaces as well.
Or certain people would be more discouraged than others from taking drugs. You know, if you've got a history of mental illness, you're probably more likely to be affected by drugs than if you don't. You know?
I would definitely argue that I don't see there being any harm in somebody thinking about legislation to prevent... But personally,
you're doing the same thing that the butthurt people, you know, bitching about Fryer doing. You're just doing it in reverse.
Can I just say I don't like the phrase butthurt?
No, not really, because I'm not saying you can't criticise someone. I'm saying that that's healthy and that's a good idea. What I'm saying is that if you're personally offensive to somebody, or if you are saying, you know, fuck off and go die,
or if you're threatening death. Like I feel like when people threaten death on Twitter, it is slightly different.
Death threats, it falls under assault law. Yeah. Right? And being offensive is so subjective. And we already have a stupid,
this is what I mean, if you are being personally offensive in the sense of, you know, if you are doing or saying something on Twitter that in real life would get you in trouble. So, for example, if you're sending Jazza loads of tweets to say, you know, you disgusting fag or whatever, that to me should be covered by the same laws as if you were saying it in the street.
I don't think so, John. Because it is an incredibly different thing. It's so different. The mental kind of process of deciding to shout at somebody and throw stuff at them and be abusive to somebody in the street, and between that and deciding to type a few letters on a keyboard, is just the mental process is completely different.
There's also the enforcement issue, like enforcing stuff on Twitter versus enforcing it in real life, completely different.
Yeah,
and you would need to recognise that in legislation. You can't just outlaw something; it has to be enforced in some way.
What do you, ladies and gentlemen, think? I'm putting an end to this because we've gone over an hour. Please do let us know. Go to our website, rightdishonourable.com, and also find us on Twitter at @rightdishonour. Feel free to tell us that our privilege makes us blind.
Or just that, right.
I think we don't understand what bag ladies are.
Yeah. If anybody could confirm what bag lady actually means, that would be wonderful. All right, we'll... leave us stars on iTunes.
Yay. All five of them.
All well, like, as many as you like. It's just quite nice to be validated. Okay, right. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.